Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Duncan Brown. How are you, Duncan?
Very well, thanks, Chris. Very well.
You? Excellent. No, I'm very good, very good. We're here at the Australia Day Tasting on Australia Day. It is Australia Day because my Facebook feed got absolutely filled up with everything wonderful about Australia today. So, you can't miss the Aussies in their Australia Day.
Absolutely. And it's buzzing, and there are a few Australian Outback hats there as well, bobbing up and down. So, no, it's a good day.
Good day. And what we're going to talk about today is Brown Brothers. They're a winery. They're one of those wineries you see around a lot, but you don't hear about as much. So I thought we'd have a chat to you. You're the European director or European manager. What's your role?
European and Middle Eastern. Don't forget that. Export manager.
Okay, Middle East. I imagine they're big drinkers of wine, you know, especially Iran.
Yeah. There have been a few in the past, but this time they've picked someone with the name Brown. So hopefully I'll be able to stick around for a little bit longer.
Yeah, I was just interviewing Richard Bamfield just recently, and he's an ex-old European manager for Brown Brothers, and I think one of the Coxes was a European manager. So there's been a few of them in the past, but I'm sure you'll last a long time.
Thank you.
Yeah. What I want to talk about today is a wee bit about Brown Brothers, a bit of their history. They are a slightly unusual Australian winery because they're a mid-sized winery, so I'd like to sort of explore some of the issues associated with that, and then we'll maybe this show, or if we've talked quite a bit, we might do it next show, talk about some of the unusual grape varieties Brown Brothers are into, because they're into some weird and wonderful stuff.
Absolutely, and this is one of the cornerstones of Brown Brothers. We're a winery with tradition because we're set up. Our first vintage was 1889 in Millewa, little sleepy place in North Victoria. The Browns had come over looking for gold, but they arrived a little too late for the gold and were left with Ned Kelly. So they thought, okay.
Just so you know, Ned Kelly's a famous criminal, really, isn't he?
Absolutely. And he was actually tried in the Millewa courthouse. In the Millewa, the winery is based in Millewa, and the church doubles up as a courthouse, or did in the last century, and he was tried there. An area of fame or notoriety anyway. We were set up in the late 19th century as part of a mixed farm. First planted 10 acres. John Francis Brown was 18 years old when he kicked all that off, so quite an entrepreneur in many ways.
It's probably the only way you could get wine at that age, or at least grog.
Yeah, absolutely. And whereas the rest of Australia was doing fortified wines for the UK or the British market,
yep.
Brown Brothers were different, and they went down the still or unfortified wine route. They had three grape varieties to start with: Shiraz, Moscato, and Riesling. We've been very innovative ever since. But one of the greatest changes that has informed the future innovation of the company was caused by a disaster, which was Phylloxera. Which arrived in Victoria in about 1915-16.
That's right, because it hit Europe about 1860-ish or something. But
that's right, and it wiped out European vineyards. Europe took about 20 years to work out what the solution was to this American problem, which obviously was an American solution, American rootstocks. One of the guys that was in charge of that in Europe and based in the Savoy and in Switzerland, where they had nurseries to help replenish the European vineyards, a chap called François de Castella, he ended up in Victoria and was employed by the Victorian government to sort the problem out in Victoria. Now, by then, quite a few wineries had gone to the wall. Brown Brothers were still around, and we got very close to François de Castella, and he helped us repropagate our vineyards. But not only that, he brought lots of weird and wonderful top graft wine varieties. And this is where our love of different grape varieties came from, 1916.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Well, sort of makes sense. All right. No, okay. And what's been happening since then? Well, we're going to talk about the grape varieties later on, because there are some unpronounceables there, which is always good. And
the company, thank goodness, has actually grown, and it grew and grew, and to the point where our larger winemaking facilities didn't enable us to do as much innovation as we wanted to do. So the big next landmark for us, and we'd done lots of new things in winemaking. In the 1930s, we produced the first botrytized Riesling. In the 1950s, we were doing...
First for Australia.
First for Australia, absolutely. Thank you. and in the 1950s, we did the first refrigerated fermentation of white wines. So it's we were the first for many things on a winemaking point of view, as well as... when it comes to grape varieties. But by the late 80s, we'd outgrown our capacity to innovate on a regular basis. And so we built a new winery next to the old one, where everything was much smaller. We had smaller tanks, lots of wine barrels, and we call this the kindergarten winery, where we send the kids in to cut their teeth, basically, before they go to school. Not really, no, no. The kids do go and learn their winemaking there, but not before they go to school. No, but this kindergarten winery is crucial for us, because it's an area that is so experimental. It enables us to work with 8 different batches per new grape variety, making 8 different styles of wines. So it's sped up our sense of innovation and our innovation project. But it's also drawn a lot of winemakers in from around the viticultural world. It's sleepy little Milawa, 3 hours north of Melbourne, is actually quite cutting edge when it comes to experimentation in wine. And we get exchanges with places in Chile, in France, in South Africa as well. Our winemakers go out there on exchanges. So it's quite an exciting place to be if you're a winemaker.
Oh, excellent, excellent. What's the wine region called? Is it called Milawa or is it Heathcote or what?
No, it's within Victoria and it's part of the King Valley.
King Valley, yeah.
So the winery is based in the lower King Valley, but we've got vineyards at the head of the King Valley, which are higher up. So we've got vineyards at 500 and 800 metres.
Okay, because King Valley came up a wee while ago as there was a big ruckus locally about whether to split it into different appellations or geographical indicators, as the Aussies like to call them. Is that right? Or
to be honest, I don't know, but yeah. It would make sense, perhaps. But maybe I'm out of line with the corporate line.
Yeah,
who knows?
Yeah, okay. No, that's right. I'm just trying to remember from a news story we covered years ago. Yeah, so.
No, there are two distinct climates, definitely. There's a cool climate, King Valley, and a slightly warmer climate, King Valley.
And the cool climate one being slightly further up in altitude.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, because
yep.
You're quite inland as well, aren't you?
So. We are, yeah. So it is more or less a continental climate. Because we're north of the Great Australian Divide in terms of that mountain range. A lot of the climate is continental.
Okay. And tell me, is there any other regions you grow grapes? Because I've just been through your wine tasting range, or not the full range, I imagine.
No. We've got over 100 wines.
Yeah, yep, I was going to say. Maybe the common ones. And I noticed that you had wines from Tasmania and all over the place. So what's going on there? Do you own vineyards in Tassie, or are you buying
absolutely
grapes? Or?
Yeah, no. We've got a winery in North Tasmania, and we've got 2 main vineyards, one up in the north and one on the east coast. And we've just completed the Cellar Door on the east coast as well, which will hopefully be a draw for as part of a wine route. But we own over 300 hectares in Tasmania. So it makes us the biggest producers of Tasmanian wines.
Oh, really? And is it sparkling wines you're doing there? No, it wasn't. It was a...
We do sparkling wines, which we put under the Piri brand. We've got dry wines and still wines, under 2 brand names. One of them is Tamar Ridge and the other is Devil's Corner.
Oh, Tamar Ridge. Yes, you do a sparkling wine, a sweet wine from Tamar Ridge, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've had that a few times. We actually used to run it in our tastings. I didn't realize it was a Brown Brothers wine.
It is now.
Oh,
yes.
You've snuck that in. It is now. Did you buy it? Or
We bought the operation in 2010 because it was owned by a logging company at the time that ran into financial difficulties and had to divest its portfolio of luxury little interesting things, which this winery was.
Oh, okay. Oh, excellent, excellent. So not everything's branded under Brown Brothers then. You've got different sub-brands, etc.
Absolutely. Anything in Tasmania doesn't have the Brown Brothers name on it, except for 1 or 2 lines that come within the Brown Brothers 1889 range. So our Sauvignon is from Tasmania.
We'll talk about that. Any other regions that you're in?
not outside of Victoria and Tasmania, but within Victoria, we've got lots of different vineyards in different areas. So we've got some vineyards up by the Murray River, which are great for as a warm country growing. And then we've got
what's that called, Swan Hill
area.
Swan Hill, yeah.
And so two vineyards there, Mystic Park and Lake Charm. And we've got some vineyards. We're one of the pioneers of the Renaissance of the Heathcote region. So we've got quite a big vineyard in Heathcote as well.
Okay. Do you own all your vineyards or do you buy in grapes?
We buy in a proportion of our grapes.
Do you know roughly what percentage?
It's about 60% that's from our own vineyards, 40% that's bought in. But that'll affect certain SKUs more than others. So for the vast majority of our wines, it's 100% Brown Brothers vineyards. But it's the most popular wines will have a higher proportion of bought.
Yeah, I doubt if there's that many people growing Tarango that you can bring the grapes in.
Unfortunately not, no.
Yeah. I suppose if you think about Australia, a lot of people think, you know, that Australia is made up of five brands that make up about 90% of production. There's lots of little boutique-y guys. If you do go to the wine regions, there's lots of little boutique-y guys doing, you know, maybe, I don't know, a couple of thousand cases, maybe a bit more, you know, but they're not big producers. And they make their money mainly, I imagine, from tourism, et cetera, and selling to locals, all that. But Brown Brothers are in that sort of awkward middle area. You're not big, so you don't get all the sort of the marketing push that perhaps some of the bigger producers get. And you're not so small that you can really say you're a niche player. So how does that work for Brown Brothers?
It's tricky. There are some upsides and some downsides. As you say, it's a little bit harder from a PR point of view, and that's why we were one of the founding members of the Australian First Families of Wine. And the other downside is that we haven't got the scale that some of our big corporate competitors have, which means that buying distribution is not an option for us with certain key customers. So when range reductions happen, we'll be first in line compared to our corporate cousins. But on the other hand, we're small enough to still be family owned and have key members of the family involved in the business. And that informs the way we do business. I mean, our mission is to create and share adventures in wine. That's our main role in life, is to create fun wines for people to enjoy. And that enables us to make decisions that are more long-term than the next financial quarter.
Yeah, that is true. Family businesses do have usually have a longer look on things, don't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I like that thing, fun wines, because, you know, this will sound very rude, and I don't take it wrongly, but I don't think of Brown Brothers as a big, serious producer. I think of them as sort of, you know, something quirky and innovative, perhaps, you know, but definitely quirky, which for a big, small winery or big, you know, they're medium size, that's quite a nice positioning to be.
That is really nice, and it's a USP that people in, you know, appreciate, all sectors of the trade, basically. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so what other problems with being that medium size, you know, can you source grapes? You say you get about 40% of your grapes in. Is it easy sourcing grapes, or is it hard? Or
it depends on which grapes. But it does create problems if we're approaching larger customers. If we get the thumbs up from them, it can lead to needing to plan more carefully for forecasting and more long term. Whereas larger players would probably just be able to turn the tap on.
Yeah. Okay. So, and you're saying that you can't really buy your sales channels, which is sort of a...
Which no one does, of course.
It's not supposed to be like that. But, you know, you can't leverage on the fact of being a really small organic or natural wine or any of this sort of... You know, it's very hard to position yourself, because a lot of wineries position themselves very boutique-y, and they have a premium price for it.
Yep.
But you guys are boutique-y because you've got some weird grapes.
Yep.
And your wines aren't too premium priced, are they?
It varies. It goes from about €7 up to about €45 a bottle, depending on the wine range and which range they're in.
Yeah.
But obviously, the ones that have the largest distribution tend to be at the less premium end of the spectrum.
Always.
Yeah.
What's your favorite wine in the range?
Oh, that's a difficult question. I've got a number of one, depending on my mood. But if I had to pick one, I would have thought Patricia Bubbles, which is a traditional method sparkling wine made from Pinot Noir Chardonnay, grown in the upper reaches of the King Valley, spends 5.5 years on its fine lees. An absolute stunner.
You didn't show that to me.
I forgot. Okay. Sorry, I just keep it to myself.
Yeah, you're going to be drinking that one. Okay, I'll get. Have you got it here?
I have.
I'll come back and try it, if that's your fave. All right then, Duncan, I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thank you.